Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true? They don't think Christianity's true. They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, one of the biggest obstacles people have to considering Christ is how they perceive Christianity. Driven by false portrayals of Christianity by the media, by false teachers, and unfortunately too often by Christians themselves, many non-Christians have a personal dislike of Christianity. And that view of Christianity really isn't true Christianity, but they think it is. And properly understood, who wouldn't want Christianity to be true? Pascal said this. He said, men despise religion. They hate it and are afraid it may be true. The cure for this is to show that religion is not contrary to reason, but worthy of reverence and respect. Next, make it attractive. Make good men wish Christianity were true, and then show that it is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, now we have a resource that not only shows that Christianity is true, but this resource also makes Christianity attractive, and that's extremely important. And the resource is called The Story of Reality: How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. That's not much to consider, is it, friends? Let me read that again. The Story of Reality: How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. And the author, of course, is my friend Greg Kokel. Most of you know who Greg is. He's been president of Stand to Reason for many years now. He has a fabulous radio program that I know many of you listen to right here on the American Family Radio Network. And this new book is even better than Tactics, and you know how good Tactics is. The book is called The Story of Reality, and everyone needs to get this book and even give it to a non-Christian friend. In fact, this is the kind of book you can give to a non-Christian friend who's at least open to considering the issue. And Greg, as always, great having you on the program.
What a treat to talk to you, Frank.
Now, Greg, I know you've been working on this book for quite a while.
15
in fact,
years.
How many years?
15.
15, it, okay. It, this
it,
is
it's
this
a little misleading. I'm 15 years ago, I came up with the concept. I've been knocking it around for all that time and hammering the details out, but at least the last year and a half, really getting down to business and putting it into print.
Well, I was privileged to read it about 6 months ago in its draft form and put an endorsement on it. And you've got endorsements from just about anybody on here. Well-deserved, because it's a fabulous read. It's extremely well-written. It's very clear. And let me just ask you the question right off the top. Why did you decide to write this book, The Story of Reality?
Well, it started out one way, and it developed into another thing in a certain sense. My first goal is I was thinking about basic Christianity and the core beliefs, the core doctrines, and also the terrible biblical illiteracy that we have in the church. People just don't understand their own convictions, you know. And so I thought, well, I'd like to put together a talk that really covered the basics. What are the sine qua nons, those things that if you remove them, Christianity would no longer be Christianity? And I thought, well, you got to believe in God. You know, that's a nice beginning. And you got to believe some particular things about man and what happened to man. Then there's some things about Jesus that are really important. And then there are things about the final things, you know, like heaven and hell. This is all part of the package. And I realized, wow, there's five things: God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. Well, that's a good core foundation. But as I began to think about this, at first it started out very left brain, you know, very anal. You know me, I like everything in order. And then I started thinking, you know, when the whole emerging church, postmodern thing started moving, I thought, you know, maybe I should cast this in story form, in narrative. That would be a lot more compelling and appealing to people. And so then it began to morph again. And as I was teaching on these topics over and over in different churches, it all began to take a little bit different form. I also I also wanted a voice in the book that was easy to listen to, so to speak. You know, the author has a voice, and the style in this book, you know, Frank, I'm actually kind of having a conversation with the reader. Mm-hmm. I'm talking with the reader, kind of like Lewis does and George MacDonald before him and Tolkien in some of his books. There's an intimacy there as I'm carrying on with the reader. But there was something else, not just the basic foundational issues, but I wanted to drive home the point that what I describe in the book and what I talk about as a Christian, and so do you, and what Christians ought to be passing on, is that our views, what we're talking about is not religious fantasy. It's not a once upon a time, not a Marxist opiate of the people, but it's rather an accounting of the way the world actually is. I mean, we have to make the case that that's it, but at least people need to know out of the gate the kind of claim that we're making. And you know as well as I do that people in the church and out of the church have a way of relativizing religion, you know. Your truth versus my truth.
Right.
But as they say in the book, you know, think about the phrase, if our story is not really accurate to reality, well, that's not any kind of truth at all, is it? Can never be my truth then. It can't be your truth. Even if we believe it, it can only be our delusion or our mistake or our error, but it can never be our truth. And so this is what I'm trying to get across there. I'm trying to give the foundation so you get the big picture in a way that's clear, that's easy to read, that's memorable, that makes sense. I have a soft apologetics kind of mixed in, which are thoughtful reflections that are kind of friendly appeals to common sense insights that we all have about the world that point, I think, to the truthfulness of the Christian worldview and without being argumentative. So this is kind of all wrapped in there. It is a kind of know what you believe and know why you believe it, but the voice I worked really hard. It was the hardest part, Frank, is not the content. It's the voice, how I interact with the reader, and I wanted to accomplish those things in a way that both Christians and non-Christians would be able to follow and be comfortable with. It's a book I think that Christians can give to their non-Christian friends without feeling at all embarrassed and without expecting them to have some kind of theological understanding. I think it's really meant for both groups in a very particular way to clarify really what we're talking about. We're talking about Christianity. It's a picture of reality. It's the story of reality.
We're talking to Greg Kokel. His new book is called The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. And Greg, everything you just said there, I think you accomplished in this book because it is written for anyone, and it's clear, and it's laid out so well. I remember you saying, and friends, many of you know that Greg is one of the lead instructors at CIA, the Cross-Examine Instructor Academy, which, by the way, will be in Dallas, Texas this August. So check our website about that, crossexamine.org. And Greg, I remember you saying that you were listening to Mere Christianity in Audible.
That's right.
To try and get that voice, and I think you accomplished it in this book.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. You know, we all have our mentors, you know, mm-hmm. and in writing, I really wanted this to be more like, you know, C.S. Lewis, not to be a copycat, but I take my
right.
voice and mend it with his, or mold it with his a little bit, blend it. And so every time I sat down to write, I would listen to a British person reading Mere Christianity on YouTube, and it really helped give me a rhythm and gave me a style, so to speak, to work with.
Yeah, and in fact, I wrote in my little blurb on it, not since Mere Christianity has a book so wonderfully told the story of reality. The greatest story ever told is true, and Greg Kokel tells it in such a compelling way that I'm recommending you not only experience it, but give a copy to everyone you care about. Why? Because the story of reality is not just the Christian story. It is your story, whether you believe it or not. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with Greg about this book, and how he explains the story of reality. And I love books like this because they're really big picture books that help you see the big story of reality before you try and drill down in the details. Because if you drill down in the details before knowing the big picture, you can miss the big picture, and you don't want to do that. My guest again is Greg Kokel. The book is called The Story of Reality, hot off the presses right now. We're back in just 2 minutes. Don't go away.
If you're low on the FM dial looking for NPR, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. My guest today is Greg Kokel. His new book is called The Story of Reality. How the world began, how it ends, and everything important that happens in between. That's not too ambitious, is it? This is a book you need to have, ladies and gentlemen. And it is a read that is an engaging read, and a read that I think really sums up very well what Christianity is all about, and it corrects so many misconceptions that our culture, and even as Greg has said earlier, the church has about Christianity. So this is a book you need to get. It's not a book that will take you all that long to finish. It's a little less than 200 pages, but those 200 pages are just filled with great insights as to what the story of reality really is. So I highly encourage you to get it. Now, Greg, before we get into some of the details of the book, let's just talk for a second for some of our maybe newer listeners who maybe don't really understand the concept worldview. What is a worldview?
Well, before I get into that, just a significant point. It is an ambitious subtitle, and I'm glad you mentioned it's less than 200 pages because the key word of the subtitle is everything important. You know,
right.
It's not a tome of theology or history. It covers the things that are really significant for eternal things and the core story that we're talking about here. So it's not hard to read. The chapters are short. They're broken down easily. So, again, just wanted to emphasize that. I start out by asking a question, and the question is, what is Christianity? And I know a lot of people would respond by saying, well, Christianity is a religion. Maybe they might say that. Or they might say, it's not a religion. It's really a relationship with God or with Jesus, and I understand that. And or that it's a guide to productive living or things. And I think all of those things are true as far as they go. I just don't think they go far enough. I think the right answer to the question, what is Christianity, is that Christianity is a picture of reality. That is, it's an accounting of the way the world actually is. It is a view of the world, or it's a worldview. Now, the reason I backed into the phrase worldview is I think that a lot of people are either confused about the notion, or they've heard it so often it ceases to have impact in their lives. And so I wanted to go at it from a different direction. We actually are convinced that the accounting that we find in Scripture of reality is accurate, that the people that are in the story really existed. They did the things that the story describes. The events actually happen or are going to happen in some case. This is the story of reality. It is a view of the way the world is. And actually, everybody has a view like this. Certainly every religion have worked it out, and every ideology, even atheism, is a worldview. It's a take on the way the world is. And even individuals, everybody's got at least a seminal form of that in their own lives. They've worked on it. And if they didn't have some kind of accounting of the basic nature of the world, they wouldn't be able to make decisions that are really pressing. They wouldn't be able to make sense of their life. They wouldn't be able to have values that this is important and this isn't important, because these things are all tied to how one thinks the world actually is. So that's the basic concept of a worldview. It's a picture of reality. And again, the story of reality captures that notion. What we're after is how the world actually is.
And you have the book broken up. And again, the guest is Greg Kokel. The Story of Reality is the new book. Greg, the book is broken up. You have an introduction on reality. And then you have, you have five parts. And that covers God, man, Jesus, cross, and resurrection. And
right.
Each one of these sections of the book, you have short chapters, which people really like. And you get right to the point. The chapters are 3-4 pages maybe. And in the introduction, you talk about reality. And you have five short chapters, confusion, puzzle, true story, two obstacles, storyline. Kind of give us a summary of what you're including in that section there on reality. What is it all about here?
Well, that's my introductory chapter or section just to put everything kind of in proper order. And I first talk about the concept of confusion, and that's what we've just been discussing, that a lot of people think of religion as our spiritual fantasy club. They don't think of religious claims like scientific claims. Those are completely different categories. They wouldn't say people's religious views are false, because that would be, you know, kind of rude, maybe intolerant. But they don't think they're actually true either, not in the deep sense of the word. And people who take religion too seriously are like kids who, you know, continue believing it's, kids believe it's Santa Claus, that's fine. If adults did, you know, that would be a little bit odd. And that's the way people, I think about religion oftentimes, outsiders, okay? I explain that picture, it's a story of reality, but it's a story that's made of pieces, so it's really more like a puzzle. And for a lot of Christians, their puzzle is a pile at their feet, you know? They've never put the pieces together. And then I go on in more detail, and I address the question, can there be a true story? And postmoderns think there can't. But I argue that, boy, you know, every time you use a map or a GPS or anything like that, you are taking a so-called picture of reality in a certain sense, a picture of the demography or the topography, and we are testing it to see if it's right. And if we drive and arrive, then we know the claims on the GPS, as far as that goes, are actually true. And the point that I'm making there is that it's not impossible to figure out what the world is really like, and it leaves open the possibility of even finding out what the spiritual world is really like as well. And so then I go into the storyline, and the storyline is very, very basic. And those are those five words that make up the next five main parts of the book. And those are the core doctrines of Christianity, but they're also the events that took place in the order they took place. Which means that, you know, just looking at your hand, and my 9-year-old now, when she was 6, she could do this. She could just tick them off on her fingers. God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. And what that represents is an outline of the story, so that wherever you are and whoever you're talking to, you have handy, so to speak, no pun intended, you have handy those 5 points, one on each finger, to give you a structure to be explain what our story actually entails, what our plot line is. And then I just go into each one of those details in each section of the, in more detail, I should say, in each section of the book.
Well, let's talk for a minute, Greg, because that's a good introduction to the whole book. And again, the book is called The Story of Reality by Greg Kokel. In part one, God, the first of those 5 major issues, you talk about the kind of the 2 major worldviews. At the end of the day, you either have matterism or you have mindism.
Right.
And can you kind of explain that?
Sure. That's my way of characterizing it. And as people take a look at the book, they'll probably recognize what those represent. Mm-hmm. Notice that in our story, it starts in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And there's a lot going on in that opening line. But one of the things we see is 2 different kinds of things in our world. We have invisible things, God, an invisible person, and we have visible things, physical things, okay? So we have both are real in our world, and this is important to know at the outset, because whenever you read a book, or any story, for example, you pick up The Hobbit, okay? What happens is the setting is set for the kind of world you're in. All kinds of things happen in The Hobbit that aren't going to happen in, you know, another story, okay, because of the world that they find themselves in. And this is the case for us. We find ourselves in a world where there are immaterial things and material things, God creating the world, okay? Which means God has the power to intervene in his world, and there's all kinds of things we could expect to happen then, things that would be odd in any other kind of world, like changing water to wine or raising the dead, that kind of stuff, okay? Now, there are competitors for our worldview, and the 2 biggest ones, it's easy to keep in mind because in our worldview, we have mind and matter. In the competing worldviews, you only have 1 thing, not 2 things. You either have all matter, that's what I call matterism, most people call it materialism, or you have all mind. That is, the material world is just an illusion. The only thing that exists there is God's mind. That would be the pantheistic worldview of Eastern religion. And all the rest is illusion. The only thing that is real is God. But then I began to talk about how both matterism and mindism are completely inadequate to explain the world the way we really find it. For example, neither of those two worldviews can make any sense at all out of the problem of evil, which is the biggest objection people have about life. Everybody knows something's wrong about the world. But listen, if there's no way the world ought to be, atheism, matterism, then you can't say that something is wrong with the world. It just is. That's all there is. In mindism, there's no difference between evil and good. It's all the same on that view. But since the problem of evil is such an obvious problem, any worldview that means to be an accurate story of reality has to take it seriously. And the Christian worldview does so and explains it. In fact, our whole story is about the problem of evil. It starts in chapter 3 and takes it all the way to the end, and then we have a final resolution of the problem of evil. And the resolution turns out to be uniquely and critically involved in the person of Jesus. And therefore, in our worldview, the objections people have against it, the problem of evil, and that Jesus is the only way, wow, that's not really a problem for us. These things go together, and I explain in the book, The Story of Reality, how they do to solve the problem of evil.
Our guest is Greg Kokel, and the new book, brand new book, just came out this month, The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. Those of you listening now, I've probably heard Greg before, either on the American Family Radio Network or through his radio program that is rebroadcast in the American Family Radio Network that you can get at Stand to Reason, str.org, str.org. They also have an app you ought to download. And, Greg, you're doing an hour a week now, or are you doing 2 hours? I can't recall.
Well, we do two hours. But since it's a call-in show where I interact with people, you know, it's not just a podcast. It's a radio show. So people call in during the live show, and I do start out with commentary. But sometimes we just run out of calls, you know, after an hour and a half. The live show is from 4 until 6 L.A. time. So it's the older, later on the East Coast and stuff. But usually we go for 2 hours, but sometimes it's only an hour show that we do. And then we have two other shorter podcasts that are 20 minutes each. And there I'm interacting with Melinda Penner based on questions that people send in at hashtag STRAsk. They tweet them in, hashtag STRAsk. And then I answer those questions in 4 minutes or less. And you know, for me, that's a challenge, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And you can get all that, friends, at str.org. Check it out. That's Stand to Reason, str.org. And Greg is the president there and has had that radio show since, I think, about 1993. Yeah. Fabulous radio program.
1990 is the radio show.
1990?
So I'm finishing my 27th year now.
Oh, wow. Wow. I listen to it every week, friends. You ought to, too. And we're going to have another half hour with Greg, so you're not going to want to miss that. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. The book is The Story of Reality by Greg Kokel. We're back in two. Ladies and gentlemen, Frank Turek with you. Wanted to let you know I'll be at Appalachian State University on January 24th. It's open to the public. Check it out. It's up in Boone, North Carolina. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. And I'll be in Oklahoma the week following that. A number of events. You can check our website at crossexamine.org. Today we're talking to my friend Greg Kokel and his new book, excellent book, The Story of Reality. How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. And here are some of the accolades for this book. Lee Strobel writes, a beautifully crafted description of the Christian worldview written in an accessible, winsome, and well-reasoned manner. Rick Warren writes, the clearest explanation of the Christian worldview I've ever read, written in a style everyone can understand. Johnny Erickson Tata writes, Greg addresses the heartfelt plea of every person who asks, why am I here? This is highly, he says, I highly recommend this book. Or she says, I highly recommend this book. J.P. Moreland, who actually mentored Greg, says, Kokel's best, and that's saying a lot because, you know, he wrote Tactics as well. Kokel's best and most important book to date. I couldn't put it down. Donald Trump writes, Greg Kokel makes Christianity great again. Barack Obama writes, the Russians hacked my email and stole the story of reality from me and gave it to Greg Kokel. What a great book, but it's part of my legacy. Actually, those last two are not on there. But Greg, just about everybody loves this book as I do. as well. It is just so well done. And I think people are going to get a lot out of it, particularly people that aren't quite sure what Christianity is all about. This book does it in a very winsome, non-offensive way that brings the reader along with you. And you get to the part three of the book here. We talked a little bit about a God and a little bit about man. Before we get to part three, I want to make this one comment and have you unpack it a little bit further. Greg, I don't care who you ask, whether the person is an atheist, a Christian, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Hindu, an agnostic, a Mooney. I don't care who you ask. If you ask the question, what's wrong with the world? There's not going to be anyone that's going to say nothing. Everything's just fine.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to know there's something wrong with the world. How do you use that truth in this book?
Deepak Chopra is the only one who'll say everything is perfect just as it is. Deepak Chopra say that, but everybody else got more sense than that.
Okay. Yeah. And you leverage that in this book. That common belief. Everyone knows there's something
right.
wrong. How does Christianity answer that?
Well, this is actually, I think, a heads up to people. They're going to be surprised at this, but I actually think the problem of evil is not one of the biggest arguments against Christianity. I think, and God, I think the problem of evil is our ally, because
Amen.
This is something, like you said, everybody knows. Okay. Now, how can there be a problem of evil? I made a reference to it earlier. Well, things just aren't the way they're supposed to be. That's the evil in the world. But there can't be a way. It can't be the case that they aren't the way they're supposed to be, unless there is a way they're supposed to be. That is, there's got to be a supposer in there. That means there's got to be a God that made the world to operate in a certain way that we are not obeying. So the problem of evil itself implies the existence of God. Only theists can make sense of the problem to begin with, okay? But solving it is another issue. And I express this very clearly in the chapter or the section on man, that man is beautiful, that is, he's made in the image of God. There's something unique and special about him, but he's also terribly broken. And by the way, that's something else everybody knows. And it was his rebellion that broke the world. Man broke the world in his rebellion. And what God decided to do, instead of just lowering the boom like he did with the angels when they rebelled, he decided to set up a rescue plan and become a man himself in the person of Jesus of Nazareth and do two things. He lived the perfect life that we were supposed to live but didn't. And then he paid the debt that we owe to God for our rebellion. And I go into some detail about this, although it's not arcane theology. It's very practical to show how this is the only solution to the problem of evil.
Mm.
We have an answer to this, and the answer is in the singular source of salvation, Jesus Christ. Some problems have multiple solutions, Frank. Some problems have singular solutions. And the nature of this problem is that it requires a singular solution, and Jesus of Nazareth did something nobody else could do, and that no one but the God-man could do. This is why it had to be God and a man at the same time. And this is our answer to the problem of evil. God took the evil upon himself. He suffered for it himself so that we could be set free and the world could be restored. We
yes,
have
when
the answer to the problem of evil.
When Jesus said, he is the only way, that was not an arbitrary claim. Can you explain why it was not arbitrary, Greg? Why it's just based on the nature of reality?
Right, right. I saw somebody take on the Huff Post. I saw him take on this, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and he had an entirely different take on it. Here's my interpretation. These Christians got it all wrong. This guy doesn't realize that the New Testament's absolutely thick with statements like that. We have 100 verses in a little booklet, for example. You can't just take one verse and try to read it a different way. And it's because it was the core of Jesus' mission. I came to seek and to save that which was lost. I came to give my life a ransom for many. What's a ransom? It's a payment. You make a payment to buy something. What do you buy? You buy a body when you pay a ransom. Well, what was the payment price? The payment price was Jesus' own body. He gave his body to buy our bodies. This is why he could say, I am the way, because there is nobody else who could do that, Frank. And the reason is that every other religious leader, except for Jesus, was in slavery himself. As good as they might have been, they were still slaves to sin. Jesus was the only one who was not a sinner, and therefore he was the only one that could rescue.
Absolutely. He can be just and the justifier, as Paul says in Romans 3:26. God can't wink at sin. He wouldn't be just if he did. So what does he do? Right. He punishes the innocent substitute, the perfect substitute in our place. Now, Greg, you've really got a provocative statement in this book, and I'm looking right now at page 113, The Rescue. And again, my guest is Greg Kokel. The book is called The Story of Reality. You need to get the book. Trust me. Here's what you're saying here on The Rescue. Jesus is coming to rescue us, and this is a shocking statement that I've already quoted to people because I had the advanced copy of the book. Here's what you say, and you're going to have to defend yourself on this one because people are going to be mad. All right? You ready? Here we go.
All right.
Jesus, you say, so let us be clear. Jesus did not come to help us get along or to teach us to take care of the poor or restore social justice, end quote. Uh-oh, Greg. Explain.
Them fighting words, huh?
No, they are.
Yeah. Well, think of it one way. I mean, God had already sent a bunch of people already to tell us how to get along. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't need to come down to earth to say what he'd already said. That's one thing for people to think about. But here's the clincher, all right? And what I'm going to say next will come as a shock to some, but here it is. You can eliminate every single thing Jesus ever said in his life about the poor and about social justice, and you still will not undermine his main message one single bit. And as severe as that may sound, that is precisely what one of his closest followers actually did. John, the beloved disciple, wrote the last kind of biography of Jesus, and he was a member of Jesus' intimate inner circle. And this is, as some would think, the most elegant summary and most definitive statement of who Jesus was and what he came to do. And you can start from John's very first sentence to his very last sentence, and you will not find a single word about helping the poor or restoring social justice. The Gospel of John has not a word about it. Now,
wow.
Does this mean that Jesus didn't care about the poor? No, it doesn't mean he didn't care about the poor. He didn't talk about it. We see it in the other Gospels. It means it's not his main purpose. Jesus came for a different reason. And if you follow his teachings and you think, boy, that's the cool thing, and let's do the social justice deal, well, maybe you might be doing some nice things, but you are missing Jesus completely. And this is why I'm stunned when people emphasize the social justice issue of Jesus, because I'm convinced they've never read Jesus. They have never carefully looked through the Gospels to see what Jesus had to say. Look, he had four major sermons, discourses, the Sermon on the Mount, the Bread of Life discourse, the Olivet discourse, and the Upper Room discourse. In the last three, the Bread of Life, John 6, the Sermon on Olivet, that was Matthew 24, and then the Upper Room, that's like one-third of the Gospel of John, kind of. There's not a single reference to the poor, none. And even when we go to the famous Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is talking about the poor in spirit, spiritual poverty, not their income. And the rest of the times he mentions the poor, he's using the poor almost every time as an example of something else. You know, when you give alms to the poor, don't give in public, give it in secret, okay? Well, he's not telling people to get alms to the poor. He's assuming they're going to do that, but he's saying that you shouldn't do it in a way that puffs yourself up. And time and time and time again, we see this. This is simply not the emphasis of Jesus' life, period. And people think it is, are missing the whole boat.
Wow. Now, when I read that, I went, just what I said, wow, because I never even thought about And here's what you write in the book. You say, these are the facts. We must face it if we're going to get Jesus right. Social justice is not the gospel. It was not Jesus' message. It is not why he came. His real message was much more radical. Jesus' teaching and the story itself focuses on something else. Not the works of Christians, but rather on the work of Christ. That is what the story teaches.
That's
from Greg's book, The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. Now, Greg, I got a minute before the break.
You said it so well, and then I realize you're reading my stuff.
I'm reading the book, Greg. I can't say this on my own. All right, we got a minute before the break. What was the central message he had then? If it wasn't social justice, what was it?
It was to seek and to save that which was lost, to give his life a ransom for many. I came
mission,
not for the righteous, but for sinners to go to repentance.
Exactly. And that, if you miss that, as Greg says, you miss everything. And elsewhere, Jesus said, you've neglected the weightier matters of the law, and you're majoring in the minors. And I think too often, those of us who call ourselves Christians major in the minors. Let's not miss the big picture, the big story of reality and what Jesus came to do to save the lost. That's what he came to do. And it's well, well stated, better than I've read anywhere else, in the book, The Story of Reality by Greg Kokel, my guest. And he's going to be back for our final segment right after this. Don't go away. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. We're back in just 2 minutes. The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between in Less Than 200 Pages from the great Greg Kokel, author of the book Tactics, also president of Stand to Reason. You've heard of him before. If you've been to CIA, you know he's one of our lead instructors at the Cross-Examine Instructor Academy, which again is happening this August. You can start signing up now. But this time it's happening in Dallas, Texas, right in the center of the country. So looking forward to seeing you all there. Greg will be there, Sean McDowell, Jay Warner Wallace, Richard Howe, myself, Bobby Conway, many others. So check out the Cross-Examine Instructor Academy. And certainly before you get there, you want to read The Story of Reality by Greg Kokel. Now, Greg, before the break, we were talking a little bit about what Jesus really came to do. And then a little bit further in the book, The Story of Reality, you talk about the trade. What is the trade?
Well, this is something, unfortunately, that Christians only kind of have halfway. Mm-hmm. And consequently, it influences their own walk with Christ, all right? We just talked about what Jesus did not come to do. He did not come to restore social justice. This is very clear. When you asked him what he came to do, he gave different answers, okay? And there are two. The way to think of it is that he did two things, okay? The first thing he did is he lived a life that we were supposed to live. In every way that we failed, Jesus succeeded. He did everything before the Father that he was supposed to do. He had a perfect union, a perfect relationship with the Father. He obeyed the Father in everything. He challenged his accusers, which one of you accuses me of sin? He lived the perfect life. So he is not just our model, as some people will put it. We should follow him in the sense of copy him. Well, that's true. But if that's all the further you're going, then you still missed it. He is the one who is our proxy. He lived the perfect life for us. He said in the Sermon on the Mount, you are to be perfect as my Heavenly Father is perfect. Well, who fulfilled that? Nobody but him. And what he does then is he makes a trade. He trades his good life for our rotten life. Mm-hmm. I'm getting ahead of myself there. His perfection for our imperfection. His holiness for our goodness. Think of it like a bank account. He's got a bank account, and he is unbelievably wealthy. Our bank accounts are in the massive negative. Jesus doesn't just pay off the debt. He fills our bank accounts to the positive. That's the trade. He gets our sin. We get his righteousness. And this is what the Bible calls justification. The reformers called it the marvelous exchange. And Paul said it this way, 2 Corinthians 5:21, he, the Father, made him, Jesus, who knew no sin, there's the perfect life, to become sin on our behalf that we might become the righteousness of God in him. He gets our sin and the punishment for it. We get his righteousness. And this is, I mean, when you think about it, Frank, and when people think about it, this is unbelievable. It can be an overwhelming thing when we think of it. John Newton said, "I am a great sinner, but Jesus is a great Savior."
That is, it is the greatest.
The author of Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
He understood the power of the cross and the wonder of the riches of grace. And by the way, that happened, that exchange took place on a small outcropping of rock outside of the gates of ancient Jerusalem. The locals call it Golgotha, the place of the skull. We know it as the place of the cross, you know, Calvary.
Mm. And it is the greatest story ever told. Somebody put it this way. Religion is the story of what a sinful man tries to do for a holy God. The gospel is the story of what a holy God has done for sinful men.
That's it.
And that's what
the
this
trade I'm talking about.
That's the trade, and that's what is so well established and told in the book, The Story of Reality, by Greg Kokel, my guest today. Now, Greg, this trade came with a tremendous price, quite obviously, and you talk quite a bit about that in the book. Why don't you unpack that a little bit for us? What kind of penalty did Christ pay on our behalf?
Well, there are two things that are going on in the crucifixion, okay? And one of them is the suffering that Jesus experienced at the hands of man. Now, when you watch a movie like The Greatest Story Ever Told, or what was that recent one that Mel Gibson did?
The Passion, yeah.
The Passion. We see this, really, in that case, the gruesome characterization, but accurate characterization of what Jesus suffered at the hands of men. As bad as that was, that did not compare to the ordeal of the suffering that Jesus endured at the hands of the Father. Because the trade that I'm talking about took place for those 3 hours that darkness clothed the cross. So after the beating, after the whipping, after the crown of thorns, after the crucifixion, all of the physical torment that men put upon Jesus, the Father then unleashed his anger against Jesus as if Jesus were guilty of an immeasurable crime. And the reason he did this is because, well, you know, on the top of the cross where it says King of the Jews, you know, that was a statement of the crime that Jesus allegedly committed against the state that he was paying for with the crucifixion. But there's another certificate of death, so to speak, that was nailed in the spiritual realm to his cross. Paul talks about it in Colossians chapter 2, and it consisted of crimes that we had committed, our crimes, God nailed to the cross, and then he unleashed his fury on the Son of God that we deserved, so that every ounce of judgment that went to us went to Jesus. That's what makes it possible for us to be forgiven, because Jesus paid. And so when he says at the end, "It is finished," he's not saying, "I'm glad that's over with." That was the Greek word tetelestai. That means it's paid for. It's canceled out. The debt is done with. I've accomplished it. And that's the confidence every believer can have in the cross.
Now, how do we acquire that gift that's provided? Because in the book, and again, the book is called The Story of Reality by Greg Kokel. He's my guest today. In the book, Greg, you make you really clarify this issue of faith. Can you clarify that for our listener right now? What is faith?
I mentioned in the book that what I just described can't be purchased. It can't be earned. It's a gift. It's free. Jesus has already paid. It can only be received by humble trust. And this is what the story calls faith. Now, I have a whole chapter titled Trust, talking about the issue of faith, because I don't like the word faith. I think it's
no, neither distorted. Do I. Yeah.
So when people say, I'm a person of faith, or we have the faith, or got to have faith, brother, you know, what I think people read when they hear that is they think, oh, that's leap of. That's, you know, that kind of faith. The blind faith. And this isn't what Jesus had in mind at all. He had in mind an active trust. And for us, you know, you and I have given our lives to demonstrating that the facts really matter. And the reason that facts matter is because of a simple statement that also is going to jar your listeners for a moment, but I'll explain it. Faith does not save us. Let me say it again. Faith does not save us. Look, those guys who flew the planes into the Twin Towers on 9/11, they had lots of faith.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't saved. Jesus saves us. Now, we have to put our trust in him for him to save us. But my point is, if Jesus, what Jesus did is not a fact of reality, then we're not rescued at all. You know, some fancy story isn't going to rescue us. Just because we believe it strongly, if it's not true, our belief is a delusion. And our delusion is not going to rescue us. Jesus has to be able to accomplish what he said, what we're trusting him for. I mean, you've got to express faith. You can't just believe the facts. If you believe a plane can take you to Paris, it doesn't do you any good unless you get on the plane. So you got to trust in it. But you got to have a capable pilot, too, you know? Mm-hmm. You've got to have somebody who could do the job. And this is the key thing here. So much of faith right now is just blind. People just have this feeling, and they invest it wherever, and then we champion faith as if that's what it's all about. No, 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 no. If our faith is not properly invested, we're in big trouble. And this is why the facts matter so much to Christianity.
As Paul writes, if Christ has not been risen from the dead, your faith is in vain, and we are to be of all men most pitied.
Right.
You also write in here, Greg, and this is a brilliant insight, about the fact that the opposite of faith is not reason. What's the opposite of faith?
Well, unbelief, obviously.
Yeah.
I got that insight from David Noble of Summit Ministries.
Yeah, it's well stated in here, and you say the opposite of reason is not faith, but irrationality. And
that's
too
right.
Often we think that reason and faith are opposites, but they're not. The opposite.
Listen,
go ahead.
Right. You can have a reasonable faith.
Yeah.
And you can also have an unreasonable unbelief, which
that's
we
right.
run into all the time, don't we?
Exactly. Well, Greg, this is a fabulous book. Again, the book is called The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. With about 30 seconds left, tell us who you were thinking of when you wrote this book.
Well, I was actually thinking of a lot of people. I was thinking of older Christians who haven't put it all together yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of younger Christians who are just laying a foundation. I was thinking of older Christians who are training younger Christians in Bible classes and discipleship and the like. And to be honest with you, the biggest target audience I had in mind was the non-Christian.
Mm.
I was writing with them in mind, with the voice and the approach that would appeal to them so that they would take seriously the Christian account for what I think it actually is, the story of reality.
Well, it works so well. Well done, Greg. Thank you so much for being on the show as well.
It's great to be with you, Frank. Thanks so much.
That's the book. The Story of Reality, How the World Began, How It Ends, and Everything Important That Happens in Between. You can get it at str.org, friends. Go out and get this book, str.org. Also, download the STR app, the Standard Reason app, and follow Greg on his radio program.